From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. An estimated 1 million Britons gathered in London on Saturday in what was considered one of the largest demonstrations in the UK's history. They were mobilized on the day that the British Parliament was scheduled to vote on a new Brexit deal negotiated by Prime Minister Boris Johnson with the European Union. In the face of a looming October 31st deadline, protesters demanded a new referendum on Brexit and a desire to remain in the EU. Meanwhile, as Mr. Johnson characterized his deal as, quote, the greatest single restoration of national sovereignty in parliamentary history, MPs refused to vote on his deal on Saturday and then similarly stymied him on Monday. They want Johnson to ask the EU for another delay to achieve a deal. The EU has said it would not grant a delay. Joining us for an update on the seemingly never-ending Brexit saga is Natasha Hakimi-Zapata, foreign editor for Truthdig.com. Her latest report for Truthdig is called Boris Johnson Will Ruin Britain or Cry Trying. Welcome back to the show, Natasha.
Hi, Sonali. Thanks for having me.
So we had you on just several weeks ago when it felt that there was news and that things would be happening and that there might be a deal. Boris Johnson had just been named prime minister and he had succeeded in forcing Parliament into a recess. Now, on what was meant to be so-called Super Saturday, he was denied a vote. Before we get to what happened on the streets of London, what happened at the House of Commons on Saturday?
Sure. So what Boris Johnson wanted to do, so he came back from Brussels with a basically Theresa May's deal, which, as you know, lost 3 votes in the House of Commons in the spring. He came back with basically the same deal with a few changes. And the main changes were about what would happen with Northern Ireland. Because, of course, they have this issue about not putting a hard border between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. But if they're not in the customs union, they have quite a lot of problems with that. So he negotiated with Brussels and he came back with what he thought would be a winning deal. And, you know, there was a special sitting on Saturday in the House of Commons. But what happened was that a former Tory MP, one of those MPs that had the whip taken from him in September for voting against the government, which we talked about last time I was on, who's now an independent, Oliver Letwin, motioned for an amendment that would basically mean that they would not have this meaningful deal or meaningful vote on Boris Johnson's deal until they could be sure that the legislation, so the actual bill, had been passed through Parliament. Meaning essentially that Boris Johnson didn't get his, you know, black and white yes or no vote, which is what he really wanted.
Hmm. So then on Monday, he made a similar attempt and he was similarly struck down?
Right. So John Bercow, who's the Speaker of the House of Commons, he did this with Theresa May as well, actually very recently, which is he said that there's precedent for not allowing the same session of Parliament to vote on the exact same thing until there was a significant change in circumstance or in substance. And he decided that nothing had changed since Saturday in what was being presented in Parliament. So essentially, again, forcing Boris Johnson to put through the actual bill and you know, actually pass or try to pass the legislation to withdraw from the European Union. The reason that they're pushing him to do this is that there's a lot of fears that because the meaningful vote isn't actually binding, it's just kind of showing, it's the MPs showing their intention that they're going to vote on the bill. So MPs, his own MPs included, some of his own, don't actually trust Boris Johnson or the other kind of rebels to pass the legislation in time for October 31st. So they wanted to force him to ask for an extension so that they knew that within the time that they had more time to actually review the legislation, but also that they knew that he wouldn't just crash the UK out of the EU on October 31st without anything in place.
Mr. Johnson released a 1-minute video on Monday to get his, to make the case for his deal. And it's a convenient way to go through some aspects of the deal through his lens. This is what his video says. He says, our new deal with the EU will mean that we'll take back control of our laws, border, and money, and we'll strike free trade deals around the world. We'll give businesses certainty with an implementation period to prepare for life outside the EU, protect the peace process in Northern Ireland, guarantee the rights of citizens in the UK and EU. And this new deal will allow us to move on and focus on the people's priorities. And he also goes on to say, we'll invest in our NHS, the National Health Service, and put more police on the streets, and so on and so forth. So he sort of has these bullet points, including things like raising wages. What do you make of this characterization by Boris Johnson of this Brexit deal, which, if you just look at his video, sounds like a magical, fantastical, you know, agreement that will just bring riches to all individuals in Britain?
I mean, I find it a bit funny, to be honest, because first of all, this deal is just the beginning of the transition period in which they will actually negotiate what the European Union relationship with the UK will be. So it's not this like magical panacea. It's not like this button that he just pushes and suddenly the UK is out of the EU and then they can focus on other things. They're going to spend quite a lot more time and resources negotiating what will be the future relationship, not to mention then other trade deals with other places like the US, which he's very interested in. The other thing is that, you know, one of the things that the Labour and so the opposition party and others in other opposition parties object to in the deal is that, so Theresa May's deal had something called a level playing field, which said basically that moving forward, the UK would kind of align with the European Union environmental and labor standards, because the EU isn't perfect, but it's made quite a few gains in terms of labor standards and environmental standards. So that phrase is completely gone from Boris Johnson's New Deal, which just kind of tells me, and is what a lot of people have been, you know, pointing out very quickly, is here's someone who wants to make a lot of, you know, make a lot of trade deals at the cost of workers' rights, at the cost of the environment. Two things that are pretty crucial, not to mention in the middle of a climate crisis, saying that you're going to possibly backtrack on our environmental standards isn't really that great for the people of the UK, let alone the world.
So would it be fair to say that the EU ended up getting more concessions from Johnson than from Theresa May?
No, I think quite the opposite. I wouldn't say it's interesting. I mean, the thing with Theresa May was that her deal kind of pushed the situation with Ireland a little bit further down the line and tried to make an attempt to make the illusion that sort of the new government her government moving forward in negotiations would try to align with the European Union as much as possible. So Johnson getting rid of that, I would say, is not a great thing for the European Union.
I see. So let's talk about the Labour Party and what has happened within the Labour Party around this Brexit deal. It seems as though there's now a split within the party. Jeremy Corbyn is maintaining that he will not vote for a Brexit deal. He essentially wants that he actually wants the an extension for the delay, but his party is not necessarily in line with him.
Right. So Jeremy Corbyn has had a kind of a tough leadership. You know, he's pretty far left and, you know, very progressive, and that's not necessarily in line with the entire Labour Party, especially because, you know, under Tony Blair, The party moves significantly to the right, to the center right. But so Jeremy Corbyn is quite left wing. He's had a lot of issues with people in his party who are more centrist, center right, from the very beginning of his leadership. That aside, the problem that he has with the European Union, with Brexit, really, is that the Labour Party is not a pro Brexit or anti Brexit party. You know, naturally, this issue of Brexit is more recent than the parties themselves. And so you actually have a lot of constituencies that vote Labour that have Labour MPs that are for Brexit, because there is a leftist case to be made for leaving the European Union. But then, of course, there are a lot of constituencies that are also Labour that are also in favor of remaining in the European Union. So he has this really difficult situation in which not only is there a split in the party in terms of what his MPs believe would be the best thing to do in terms of the European Union, there's a split within the larger party and the voters in regards to what to do with that. So, you know, most of the parties are facing this issue. This is true of Tory, the Conservatives as well. Boris Johnson represents this kind of far-right Brexiteer stance, when really there are a lot of Tories within his party that are also in favor of remaining within the European Union.
Now, let's talk about the protests that took place in London on Saturday. As I said, an estimated million people showed up. Many of the signs were anti-Brexit, even though, as you said, there is a left-wing case to be made for exiting the EU. But most of those gathered appeared to either, you know, want to stop Brexit in any way possible, or to just have a second referendum. And given that the first one passed so narrowly, and that there were a lot of sort of irregularities with the way in which voters were influenced, it's possible and maybe even likely that a second referendum would end the Brexit, the move to leave the EU. Would you say that the majority of those who showed up were anti-Brexit?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is that this idea of a people's vote, I think makes a lot of sense in terms of democracy, right? You have a situation in which in 2016, a vote was put to the public that was a very simple yes or no question. And people knew what it meant to remain in the European Union. People didn't know what it meant to leave. As we've been seeing for the past 3 years, It's a very nuanced, very complicated topic. So, you know, Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party have committed to having a second referendum, whether it's a deal that's negotiated by Boris Johnson, which they're hoping isn't going to be the case, or if it's a deal negotiated by Jeremy Corbyn, they would like to put the vote to the people and have the two options be, hey, here's a deal that's very detailed and negotiated, so you know exactly what we're getting ourselves into, at least within reason. Or here's the option to remain, to, you know, change our minds, because in the last 3 years, we've had a little bit more understanding of what it would mean to leave, and maybe more people, as you said, it was a very narrow majority, maybe that narrow majority has shifted to a different direction.
So what will happen now in terms of the delay that MPs have pushed Johnson to seek and that the EU has said they will not grant?
Well, so it's a very kind of interesting thing. What happened on Saturday was that Boris Johnson had an 11 p.m., 12 p.m. in Brussels deadline to send this letter, you know, by law because of legislation passed in September. He had to formally request an extension if he didn't have a deal voted on by then, which is why he was trying so hard to push this meaningful vote, right? He just wanted to not have to ask for an extension. He's actually publicly said he'd rather be dead in a ditch than ask for an extension. So he was trying to kind of keep his word on this. But of course, pressuring everyone, not letting them really see the parliamentarians actually have a chance to review the deal. So what happened is at 11 p.m., almost on the dot, he sent two letters to the European Union, one in which he requested an extension but didn't sign it, and another one in which he said that it would be a really bad idea to prolong the process any longer, in his opinion. And he signed that letter. And, you know, Keir Starmer, who's the shadow Brexit minister for Labour, he said this was childish. And I have to agree with him. This is the act of someone who isn't used to hearing no, isn't used to not getting his way, right? Who's kind of coasted through on privilege and is now kind of throwing a tantrum because he didn't get to get his vote. The European Union has said so far that the fact that he sent two letters and that one wasn't signed doesn't mean anything much to them, that they might still grant the extension. So it's not so much that they're not granting the extension, that they're just not doing it immediately. They're going to take their time to review whether or not to grant it.
What about prospects for a new election? That was a question that had come up last time you and I spoke. There was a thought that there might be a snap election, and now there's no talk of any more election.
Right. I mean, again, the opposition parties are in a bit of a tough position where they, at all costs, want to guarantee all the opposition parties, Labour, the Scottish National Party, or at least most of them, Liberal Democrats, don't want a no deal. And a lot of the Tory MPs in Boris Johnson's party do not want a no deal Brexit, which on October 31st, if they don't have an extension and they don't have a deal in place, will happen. So there's still the idea of a general election, which almost certainly will happen within the next few months, is just kind of being pushed down the line to make sure that Boris Johnson doesn't trick the entire country into leaving the European Union without a deal. That's kind of how much trust they have in their prime minister, that they're doing whatever they can and passing a lot of legislation to make sure that he doesn't trick them.
So Johnson wants to leave with or without a deal, right? So he doesn't have any interest in demanding an extension from the EU. What about the EU? What is the EU? How is the EU? How are EU leaders viewing everything that's happening within Britain? Do they have this attitude of leave already? We're done.
I mean, I think a lot of them probably do. Some of them still want the UK to remain. It's probably a pretty mixed bag. One of the things I was listening to, which was very funny, was this. There were a lot of commentators kind of remarking on how, when Boris Johnson left Brussels recently with his deal, there were a lot of EU leaders, you know, Angela Merkel and Macron, all of these leaders kind of really like hugging him and patting him on the back and kind of almost in a congratulatory way. And an EU negotiator was asked, well, what's with that? Why was he kind of so celebrated? We've never seen that of a British prime minister in Brussels. And he said, well, you never know. Maybe it was a good riddance, Pat. So I'm sure there's a large chunk of people in the European Union who I think are pretty sick of the topic of Brexit. Of course, you know, a lot of the problem with Brexit is that there are other countries like Italy, like France, who have a rising far right that are also Eurosceptic. And so in some ways, Brexit, when it first happened, kind of gave those parties, those kind of further right parties, a lot of hope that that could happen with them too. And as they've seen these past 3 years, the kind of mess and very complicated situation that Brexit has caused within the UK and, you know, in relation to the EU, that started to quiet down a little bit, actually. So it's kind of a mixed bag, like I said.
So the debacle over Brexit itself is a cautionary tale for others who might have wanted to push forth a populist, right-wing populist agenda and remove themselves from the EU. And of course, we should remind ourselves that a huge part of this whole idea to leave the EU was immigration, was the influx of refugees from the Middle East and Africa, who, once they reach the EU, do have within the EU's rules an ability to move freely between countries, and anti-immigrant sentiment, which is part of the right-wing populist wave sweeping across Europe, is a big part of this. And I'm wondering if you think that this chapter in Britain itself is at some point going to end up with Britain being the biggest loser rather than the EU. I mean, certainly the EU may find itself one country short, a big economy, that is. But in the end, it seems as though it's the UK and people within the UK that are losing out.
Yeah, I mean, it's really unfortunate. But the situation is that actually, the UK, I think, does have a lot more to lose in this situation.
Right, you even know, though there is, as you said, this left-wing case for Brexit. And in fact, what is that left-wing case?
It kind of varies. But the idea is that there are elements of the European Union that are quite elitist, that are quite undemocratic. For example, the existence of the European Commission, which has appointed members as opposed to, you know, elected members, which is the European Parliament. You can vote for your MEP, your member of the European Parliament. You can't vote for your representative in the Commission. And they they have quite a lot of power. The commission has quite a lot of power. So there are these undemocratic elements. The European Union has its flaws. It certainly does. So that's kind of the case. But I've thought that one of the sort of better approaches that I've seen has been former Greek minister, Greek finance minister, Yanis Varoufakis, who says, you know, he's the leader of the DiEM25 movement in Europe now. And he says there's a case for remain and reform. To remain within, you know, he was talking about the UK specifically, but in general, this idea that if you're not happy with the way that the European Union is going, leaving isn't really the best option. Maybe staying and actually trying to work towards a better European Union that works for more people, especially for more workers, right? Like you have this situation in which right now what we're seeing, as I was saying before, is that environmental standards and labor rights are under threat if the UK leaves the EU. So actually that's one of the things that I would say will be damaging in the UK, this idea that, you know, the other situation that they're in is that the UK will then become a quite smaller, have a much smaller negotiating position, really, against an economy like the US, especially under Trump, who will quite possibly, almost for sure, be quite bullish in his negotiations with the UK for a trade deal. So I see a lot of disadvantages, and not to mention the fact that there are a lot of UK citizens who are currently living in the European Union, a lot of European citizens that are currently living in the UK. And though the deals have tried to make create a situation in which, for the moment, those that are in each of these places are kind of safe in presuming that they can stay where they are, you limit the movement that a lot of these people have. A lot of British people retire in Spain where the healthcare is fantastic and their pensions can go further. A lot of people in the European Union have come over to London because there have been a lot of job opportunities in the UK. And so really the people who are more at a loss are the UK citizens and then also the European citizens who have lived here.
You mentioned Trump. He chastised Theresa May for not being able to come to a deal and for not taking his advice, because of course Trump thinks he can solve any problem on earth. But his buddy Boris Johnson, whom he shares not only a lot in common with, but you know, is very friendly with, he has not really commented on Johnson's struggles so far. Natasha, we'll link to your truthdig.com article that you wrote about the latest chapter in Brexit. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I'm sure we'll have you back on at least one more time before this dilemma is solved. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Natasha Hakimi-Zapata is a foreign editor for truthdig.com, and her latest report there is called Boris Johnson Will Ruin Britain or Cry Trying. We've been talking about the latest chapter of the Brexit drama. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and now Spotify.